Hey everybody, and welcome to episode number 58 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 10th, 2015, and we're going to be talking about new comics coming out tomorrow on Wednesday, February 11th. With me, as always, is Dave.
Hey guys.
And I'm Billy. And yeah, let's talk some comics. Dave, this is a very partisan week. Before the show, we were talking about you had mentioned, you were like, I don't see many good things coming out from Marvel, you know, but DC's got a bunch of stuff. And I had the opposite reaction, where I was like, I don't see anything from DC. Marvel all the way this week.
Yeah, and then I think I summed it up pretty well, where I said, you know, I think it's just, if you're reading, like, week-to-week books kind of stuff, like, they're coming out.
Yeah.
Nothing too special is coming out.
That's a good point. Looking over, you know, what we're both thinking about picking up, I think we each have something that's basically either a new series this week or a special this week from either of the companies, and then a bunch of continuing series that we've been reading.
Right.
Yeah. So for the big release to me is Darth Vader number one. This is not a limited series I found out today. This is an ongoing series.
And really?
Darth Vader's first ever ongoing series.
And where does this take place in his timeline?
I believe it takes place, like, the first storyline is going to take place right after the end of the first Star Wars movie. You know, the original Star Wars movie, I should say. Not episode one, but A New Hope.
Right.
Episode four. So Kieran Gillen, the writer of The Wicked and Divine from Image Comics, and also the writer of Young Teen Loki and Young Avengers over at Marvel, he's writing this, and Salvador LaRocca is doing the art.
You know, I gotta hand it to Marvel. They are putting their top creators on these Star Wars books, and you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. I wouldn't say I'm as big of a Star Wars fan as you are, but I mean, I was never interested in picking up Star Wars comics, but I mean, now I'm like, I'm definitely going to read these trades because they look good, both like artistic-wise and, you know, writing-wise.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, you look over at Dark Horse's line of books, and they came out with good titles over the years. They got Sergio Aragonés to do a Star Wars one-shot. But you make a good point in that they never really got like a big name writer to work on a Star Wars comic until basically 2 years before they lost the license when they got Brian Wood to write Star Wars.
Right. I mean, and I would say they didn't get big writers at the time. Like, big writers wrote Star Wars, but like John Ostrander was writing Star Wars for the past few years. But like, I feel he's like past the peak of his, you know, celebrity in comic books.
Right.
You know? Like, so, like, you know, I'm sure he has a loyal fan base that followed him there, but, like, you know, it's not like when he was writing Suicide Squad and everyone's like, have you heard of this John Ostrander guy? You got to pick up every book he's doing, you know?
Yeah, or even when he was writing Martian Manhunter, and he was a name that people picked up comics based on his name.
Right, yeah, and, you know, he really had I mean, he's never stopped working,
right,
and he's had a good long run, but, like, you know, like, I don't feel like he was, like, you know, and I don't want to say at the top of his game creatively, but, like, you know, just celebrity-wise.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what Marvel's doing here, is these, like, they're taking their top creators who are creatively great at this point, you know, like, artistically speaking, and also, they're a celebrity in comics are very big right now, and putting them on the Star Wars books.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying completely. We're not saying at all that John Ostrander's past his prime. We're merely saying that his star doesn't shine as brightly, you know, in on the lips of comic book fans.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I don't hear many people bringing up John Ostrander other than these days, other than in reference to his Suicide Squad comic. And that's largely because of Copra, the Michel Fife book, which you know, pays homage to that, and also because of the new Suicide Squad movie that's coming out.
Right.
Yeah. I started reading Suicide Squad based on what DC had available digitally, and it is really good. I can't wait to read the whole thing. That's one of those 80s comics I just want to sit down with the whole run, kind of like Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Right. They have a a sale every once in a while, and they always throw out Suicide Squad comics, and I'm like, I really want to buy it, but like it's, you know, it's never at the right point where I'm like, yeah, I could throw down, you know, like a good $50 and just
Yeah.
read the whole thing.
It seems like they always put Suicide Squad on sale. Like the week after, I like double down on two huge sales where I'm like, oh man, check out this sale and check out
Right.
this sale. I'm gonna blow like all this money here. And then I've got all these unread comics and I'm like, oh man, I can't buy another sale.
Right. Yeah. And they're not strategically placed.
No. At least as far as our comic enjoyment is concerned.
Yeah,
Like a little warning
exactly.
ahead of time when you're gonna do a Suicide Squad sale, DC. That's all we're asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the big book coming out for you this week?
Well, I mean, I have down on my list that I'm grabbing Constantine, and Earth 2, World's End, and the New 52, Future's End, and they all revolve somewhat around the same storyline. Constantine looks really cool because it looks like he might be killing his Earth 2 counterpart, and so that's pretty cool.
Interesting. So how long has this Earth 2 counterpart been around? Like 2 issues?
Well, yeah. Couple issues, you know. He's
Okay.
I'd say like it's a good 4 issues in now.
Okay. And the his Earth 2 counterpart, you'd mentioned him before, but is he also like a magic user?
He is. I've only started reading the ones that have dropped in price, so I'm not like up to date,
Okay.
but like basically it's like, you know, what if Constantine wasn't a screw up? And
Okay, now I remember you saying that, yeah.
yeah, and so I guess if Constantine wasn't a screw up,
He ties his tie all the way up.
yeah, yes, he
Gets that
shaves
top
on a
button.
regular basis,
Yeah. Shaves more than twice a week.
right? Exactly, and the other thing from DC that I'm looking at is the Harley Quinn Valentine's Day special.
Yeah, DC's really—they're coming out with these Harley Quinn specials on a regular basis. They did a holiday one. They did a San Diego Comic-Con one.
Right, and they're all being written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti, and I'm really excited about it. You know, I just actually grabbed the first trade that Comixology had on sale for $4, and I'm really looking forward to getting into Harley Quinn, because I mean everyone's been talking about her being like the Deadshot of the DC Universe.
Oh, interesting.
And
The Deadpool, I think you mean.
Deadpool, yes,
Because
Deadpool.
I think DC has a Deadshot
The
already.
Deadshot of the DC Universe is Deadshot. Ah,
Yeah,
yes,
that's like I call Spider-Man the Wolverine of the Marvel Universe.
but I think that's a really cool take on the character, and you know, like a maybe a void that could be filled because you know you have Deadpool, and then.
Yeah.
And to take that and flip it from a female perspective could be really cool. So, when I read that description, I was like, I'm gonna read this.
Yeah, I could definitely see Harley Quinn being the Deadpool of the DC universe. I think she breaks the fourth wall in these specials. You know, she addresses the reader.
Right.
She is very zany these days, and she's not just like Joker or Poison Ivy's plaything. You know, she's her
Right.
own character and very unhinged.
Yeah.
If Marvel and DC ever got together to do another intercompany crossover, I would love to see a Deadpool Harley Quinn book, maybe written by Joe Kelly.
That would be cool. That would be really
Yeah,
cool.
with art by Amanda Connor.
Oh, I'm sold.
Looking through the list, like we've got good comics coming out, but nothing really like noteworthy. I don't know.
Right. So,
Yeah.
what's your 20?
What's my 20? Okay. Starting out with Darth Vader. It's a $5 comic. I know I've said in the past I'm loath to spend $5 on a comic, but my love of Star Wars and my love for anything written by Kieran Gillen, and it is a bigger than usual comic, makes me jumping on this book. That's like that'll be my first read this week.
Right.
And then after that, it's just the next issue in series that I'm reading. We got the new issue of The Walking Dead, which has a creepy as hell cover. Carl without his eye patch on, you know, missing like part of his face. It's not a pretty sight. And like not hiding under his dad's hat. Like Carl
right.
on this cover looks like, you know, like Chucky. Like he looks like a broken doll.
That's creepy.
Thor number five, continuing the Jason Aaron written female Thor run. Really enjoying this. The art's been great. The writing's been great. And then after that, it looks like my third Marvel book of the week will be Nightcrawler number 11. This continues the Chris Claremont, Todd Knock run. I love Todd Knock's art. I've been pleasantly surprised with Chris Claremont's writing on this. It's been really good. And anytime this comes up, I recommend it. Like, if anyone's a fan of 1980s and 1990s X-Men comics, to give this a shot. And then to round it out, I'm going to go over to IDW and pick up Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 5 for $4. And this remains one of the most unique comics on the market. And this, I believe, also is an ongoing series.
Oh, wow.
And while we were surprised by that, you know, these days an ongoing series could mean 12 issues.
Right, right.
Yeah, like a year of a comic is considered an ongoing series. When I remember when the Vision and Scarlet Witch had their two miniseries, the second one was labeled a 12-issue maxi series.
Yeah,
it seems these days most things are.
Yeah, gone is maxi series.
Yeah, that's just series now.
Right, right.
So that's exactly $20. Boom.
Wow, good job. So my 20 is Constantine, Earth 2 World's End, and the New 52 Futures End, which I brought up before, being all kind of part of the same story or sharing.
And we're racing towards the end of both those books.
Right towards convergence.
They
will be converging their storylines, I believe. that brings
well
me
played.
$9, and after that I'm going to pick up Justice League United number 9, which is $4, and I believe this is the last book. I don't know if this book in particular, like not number 9, but this series will be the last book that Jeff Lemire writes for the DCU.
Oh wow.
And he's jumping over to Marvel. And you know, I don't think he's writing anything else for DC. So I don't know if he's going exclusive with Marvel or what the deal is, but
yeah,
that's where he's headed.
That's really interesting. Just because he's made such a name for himself at DC, like it seems like he's like best friends with Scott Snyder. So I figured, you know, the two of them would be at DC for a long time together.
Right. Well, I mean, I know they're doing an Image book that's going to be coming out where Scott and him are co-writing and he's drawing.
Oh, no way.
So I think it's going to be an ongoing.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and so that should be coming out this month or next month. And then after that, I'm going to pick up Harley Quinn Valentine's Day Special number 1, which is also a whopping $5, but I feel like it's going to be extra pages. And that will bring me to $18.
Nice.
And so I'm
what do you do with $2?
Well, there's no $2 thing, so I'm just going to go for the $1 for $1 Usagi Yojimbo special.
What is that issue? Is it a reprint of like his first appearance or
It reads like a new issue. I'm not sure. I've never read a Usagi Yojimbo comic. I know him from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon show.
Right. Yeah, that was. It's funny. Like that's where I think a lot of people, myself included, was first introduced to Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like a jerk on that cartoon.
Right. And I was, you know, I remember everybody, like a lot of my friends were like, "Oh man, Usagi Yojimbo's so cool." And I was shocked to find out that, you know, Usagi Yojimbo wasn't even part of the Ninja Turtles universe.
Yeah, so was I. That was one of those things where I was like, wait, he has his own comic and it's not put out by the same company that makes the Ninja Turtles comics? And wait, who is this guy who's not like Eastman or Laird?
Yeah, and I wonder how that all, I'd love to read an article how that ended up happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, no, that's a good use of that spare dollar right there.
So what did you read this week, Billy?
I read The Wicked and Divine. Basically, I just caught up on the whole series. I read all the issues, numbers 1 through 7. Have you read this comic at all yet?
No, I got a. I think I have the first issue from a sale or a freebie or something like that. But in the last image sale, I didn't pick it up.
Okay.
I wasn't like totally in on the Loki series that Karen Gillan did, so I was like, I don't know, maybe I'll pick it up, maybe not. And I
Right.
guess I decided not when I probably usually what I do when there's like a Comixology sale, I load up the cart, and
Right.
then I like remove until I get to the price point that I had set in my head of what I would spend. And so I guess it did not make the cut.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, it doesn't make sense that you didn't buy it, but it makes sense the thinking behind it.
Right,
Here's what
right.
I would say to do is you should, on the Marvel Unlimited app, read their Young Avengers run. You don't need to know anything about the previous Young Avengers run. It does tie into his Loki run a little bit, but they pretty much explain everything you need on page 1 of that. Because that has art by McKelvey and is written by Gillen, and it's fantastic. And it will make you a fan of just that creative team. And then after that, because you're going to be sad that that series ends, that's when you jump into The Wicked and the Divine. And man, it is awesome. Like, the premise of the book is that every 90 years or so, gods inhabit the bodies of mortals, and but only for like 2 years. And so this comic is basically like Kieran Gillen's take on being an artist. They had another series at Image called Phonogram, which was kind of like their take on being an audience member, and this is their take on being what it's like to be an artist. And so all of these gods, they're gods, but they're not gods like, you know, the way gods are normally depicted in comics with togas and stuff. They're basically like pop icons. Like, if you watched the Grammys last night and were reading The Wicked and Divine at the same time as I was, it was like there was a lot of overlap going on. Like, I was like, well, I was like, I don't know if this is intentional, but I see like Taylor Swift and Kanye West could be characters in this book.
I was surprised that people watched the Grammys.
Oh, just because you're not a fan of them, or what?
Well, I never like knew where they pulled their like awards from, you know, like
Yeah, I always found the Grammy Awards to be a little suspect, but they usually have really cool music acts on, and last night was 2 nights
that's true.
ago was no exception. They had they would have current acts teaming up with older, like more, you know, more legendary people. So Hozier teamed up with Annie Lennox. So Annie Lennox came out to sing "Take Me to Church" with him, and
Oh, that's cool.
that was fantastic. Like, and I remember like one of my favorite Grammy moments years and years ago. It was after Joe Strummer passed away. Dave Grohl, Bruce Springsteen, and a few other people got on stage and did London Calling together. I think Elvis Costello was on there too. And it was awesome. It's one of these things that for like the longest time could not find anywhere. But it's one of my favorite music moments of all time.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I think I was more shocked about that with I this morning everybody was posting about how Kanye West got on stage with Beck because he won like I guess album of the year.
Yeah, I was amazed that they made such a big deal about that this week, just because like he got on stage and Beck was like, "Yeah, come up," and then Kanye West like sat down, and you know, I think it's because he ran his mouth afterwards, and it's like, and people were like, "I can't," and then like the same news people would be like, "I can't believe people are reporting on this." Like, you're reporting on this.
We ended up watching the video at work the other day, and I was like, "Huh? Well, like it seemed like Beck was like, "Oh, come on up
Yeah.
here. Come on, what do you want to say?" Like, and he was being nice about it, which probably diffuse the situation even more, because like, what's he gonna do? Be like, this guy's a loser.
Yeah.
Beck would be like, right, I wrote a song about that. And yeah, so I was just kind of shocked. And then it was funny. I was reading what he had said afterwards about like how they don't respect some artists and creativity and stuff like that, which like, it's really hard to say that when you're arguing about Beck, who has like a totally different album, like every time he puts out an album. So I'm like, you know, maybe if you threw that out with like, you know, you kind of look great when you do that with like Taylor Swift or something like that, who's, you know, stays somewhat in the same, you know, genre and doesn't like, you know, expand as much as Beck does, you know. And I'm not saying she's not talented, but she doesn't have the versatility that Beck does. And I was thinking about my wife, who is a dance teacher, and she runs their competition team, and they're the youngest kids in the school just got like not the greatest marks on one of the competitions they went to, and she explained to them the what objective and subjective criticism is, and like they gave it, you know, they're like, oh, so this would be objective, this would be subjective. And I read this and I was like, I guess Kanye West didn't get my most lesson on what subjective criticism is.
It's amazing how this has come to grip America when even we're mentioning it on a comic book podcast.
I totally went off track with that. But,
don't worry, I'm not editing this out. I'm editing this out. So that's both our so we were talking about The Wicked and Divine.
Right.
And so I guess my fault, I brought it up. But yeah, you should definitely pick up the first trade paperback, except I would say, you know, if it comes down to like getting the first trade for $5 or getting the first five issues for $1 a piece, I personally think people should buy the issues individually. Or if you were not buy it on sale, buy the first trade for $10 and like the issues for $2 a piece, buy it individual issues, because at the end of each issue, you have a great text piece by Kieran Gillen, where he just kind of just gives his thoughts about like his writing process, and he goes into that more on his Tumblr page. But it's nice having that like right as like an end piece as soon as you finish that issue.
Right. Yeah. No, I can see that.
Yeah. And then the other thing I read this week, I read Lady Killer number 1 and 2 from Dark Horse.
Oh, I did the same thing.
What'd you think of it?
I enjoyed it. It was, you know, I'd read it really quickly, like a couple weeks ago, and the first issue, and it reading 1 and 2 together work a little better because it not much happens in the first issue.
It is very fast paced.
It's fast, but not a lot happens. You know what I mean? Like I read the issue in maybe like 5 minutes. I don't know. Like,
it
felt like I just like cruised right through it, and I liked it. I liked the art. I liked the story, and I feel like this is a wait for trade.
Oh, interesting. I had the opposite reaction. Like I love the art and the story, and I like the wry sense of humor that it has too. After finishing the second issue, I was like, I don't want to wait 3 more weeks. I want the next issue now.
Right, and I think I had that same feeling where I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to wait another 3 weeks. And it's not like a – I would put it in the Wonder Woman category, actually, where you could wait or you couldn't, actually.
Gotcha.
Because it doesn't have a hard-to-follow storyline or, like, a lot of plot points where you're going to be like, what the heck happened last time, you know, like, a month ago. So, you know, you could really go either way, but yeah, I definitely like it's just like a little bit of story where I'm like, I need more. And so a lot of times when I feel that I need more and I know that I could wait, I'll wait.
Yeah, no, I get you. And I get like the decision to wait to trade Wade for it, especially each issue ends on a cliffhanger leading into the next one.
Right.
But yeah, I'm all over this book. Like, it entertained me so much that I was like, this is immediately at the top of my reading pile. This is up there. Like, I like that the two titles I read this week, Wicked and Divine and Lady Killer, I enjoyed them both so much. So
That's awesome.
they are both on my pull list, on my buy list. I'm gonna be now, and this is only a 5-issue limited series, so you won't be waiting long for the trade, I don't think.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, either way, you guys will, should enjoy the heck out of Lady Killer.
Like, you're not trade waiting on it because it's not entertaining enough for you. You just want to be able to read it all at once.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't ever like, I know there's like a negative connotation to trade waiting, but
Right.
I mean, I that's sometimes how I like prefer to read my comics because I enjoy them so much more that way. Sometimes I feel like it's a compliment. Like I would never trade wait, for Superman really, because you can read that month to month and you're not gonna like forget anything. But like I feel like a more complex story that, you want to read and focus on is great to trade wait for.
Yeah. And what I did like in Lady Killer was the use of splatter in the art, like ink splatter.
Yeah, I really like that too, where they kind of mimic blood splatter.
And it really added to the tone. And I also like the use of perspective that the artist used, where it was almost like, the drawing was like a fisheye lens, where like her hand was like very close to you, but her body was far away.
Yeah, they definitely like I love his drawing style. It reminded me of the Jetsons. It reminded me of 101 Dalmatians. It reminded me of like the it reminded me of the Dick Van Dyke Show or what's the Bewitched show. It definitely captured that era.
I could see if they made a movie out of Lady Killer, I would actually want Don's second wife from Mad Men to play the title role.
Oh, yes. She was also on Jack and Bobby.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah. That Brad Meltzer show on the CW. Yeah.
One of my high school teachers, her son-in-law, was one of the creators of that show.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool. Yeah, I guess so. He was like a co-creator with Brad Meltzer.
Yeah, I think they were like college friends or something.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, because because her dad on that show was Sterling from Mad Men.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's so,
Yeah.
that's, wow, that's crazy. I wonder if Matt Wiener worked on that show at all.
I don't know. Maybe. It's highly possible. A young Bradley Cooper was on that show as well.
Now, you had met Bradley Cooper was on Jack and Bobby?
Yeah, he was like the TA for Jack and Bobby's mom who
Oh,
worked there in
crazy.
college, yeah.
Wow. These are interesting facts about a show that hasn't been on in like 12 years. Lasted half a season.
Yeah,
But things I did not know about. Did you like watch this show on Netflix a couple of years ago? Is that how you know all this?
I watched it it was more than a couple of years ago. I watched it maybe a good like five or 6 years ago on demand, and it was just free on demand and I just cruised through it all. It was a really good
Gotcha.
show. I enjoyed it. There was no resolution, but it was really good.
So you had mentioned, Superman's a comic that you read on a monthly basis, and you did read Superman number 36 this week, right?
Yes, which isn't
So,
the recent one
oh,
with
it's not there. Oh, okay,
no,
38 is the recent one.
I wait till it drops in price.
Gotcha. I was about to ask you what you thought about Superman's new power and his new costume.
Well, we went over the costume last week, and I
That's
think
true.
that's fine. And the new power, I'll let you know when I read it, but I'm not too excited or too unenthused about it. Like, I'm just like, oh, another power. Okay.
Do you know what the power is?
I don't know. I didn't.
Okay, I won't spoil it for you then.
Okay, yeah, I've kind of been staying away from spoilers till I read it, but I mean, okay. Like, like he has so many powers to begin with. Like, I don't feel like another power is going to make or break the character.
Gotcha. Yeah, this power is pretty cool because it can be used as a plot device too, because it has a side effect that affects Superman negatively.
Oh, that's cool. That's
Yeah.
cool. That,
And
you
I'll
know,
leave it
I,
at that.
well, you know, I like it even more now because, you know, anything that makes Superman a little more beatable is great for writers.
That's true. So now we talked about you were looking forward to reading Rat God from Dark Horse Comics by Richard Corbin. Did you read that this week?
I did. It was interesting. I'm gonna go for number two. But it was very it just a lot of setup. Dialogue had that like classic like indie comic I say what I'm thinking dialogue.
Okay.
But it was good. I feel like there were time jumps in there that weren't explained, but happened. And they'll be explained as the story goes along. It definitely deals with racism and Native Americans and different gods, and I'm not really sure where it goes, but I'm interested to see where it goes.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I didn't even realize it was a series. I thought it might have been a one shot. So that's cool. That's an ongoing, or at least a limited series.
So those were the two Dark Horse books I read. And then I read Secret Origins number 7 this week, which just went on sale for $4 or $3. No, $4. Yeah. Because it's like a whopping like $6 a month for that book or something.
Is it like a triple size comic or a double size comic? Or like,
But
what's going on with this?
you get three origin stories in it.
Okay.
There's like the Flash. Huntress and Superboy was this couple of months ago. And the Flash was interesting because Geoff Johns kind of redid Barry's origin with Rebirth. And that pretty much stuck in the New 52. And they took they relied heavily on that on the Flash TV show. But reading this, it even looks like they looked at Geoff Johns, who looked at, or they looked at the Flash TV show, who looked at Geoff Johns, and now it's even closer to the TV show than I think it was before. I might be wrong, but that's just the feeling I got.
Gotcha.
The Huntress by Paul Levitz and John Boy Myers was really good.
And he's the current artist of Spawn, I believe. I think he drew issue 250 that just came out.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I could see that. He's definitely like a cartoony fun image type. Like I could see him working well at Image. The coolest thing about this is that you know how like Robin classically took his look from Robin Hood.
Yes.
So they Paul Levitz ties Helena Wayne's choice to become Robin Hood into Robin to become Robin into Robin Hood just like Dick Grayson, but it's also because he's a someone who steals to for from the rich just like her mother.
Oh, interesting.
And it was just like a nice little twist. The story was like a nice origin story, but that was just like a really great twist on like some like continuity that's already there.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I really like that. And then I read Spider-Man Quality of Life numbers 1 through 4. It was a miniseries by Greg Rucka and Scott Sava.
I remember that miniseries. That came out in the early 2000s, right? Like 2002, 2003.
Yeah, I feel like it was like right around the second movie with
Okay.
Tobey Maguire.
Right.
And it was a basic, it was a basic comic plot about, or a basic Greg Rucka comic plot.
Okay. I remember that series getting a lot of press about it when it first came out.
Yeah, well, basically because it was all digitally done. And not the digitally done that we think of now, where like people draw on a tablet, but
Right.
it's like 3D animated, digitally done characters
Yeah, because
and
it almost looks like action figures in the book.
yeah, I would say the strong suit is actually the facial expressions were really great in there. The backgrounds were probably the worst.
Oh, interesting.
It was a decent read. I don't know if I'd recommend it, but it was interesting. It was interesting. It was definitely a look at the time that it came out. Nice little time capsule.
Yeah, that's true. And Karen Gillan actually has a great quote. I think it's in his text piece at the end of The Wicked and the Divine, number one, where he talks about how when he writes comics, he doesn't write a comic thinking about how it's going to be perceived, like 10 or 15 years down the line. He's writing a comic for like right now. Like when he wrote Young Avengers, he wanted that to be about like what it's like to be a teenager in 2013. And like
Right.
he doesn't care if in 2025 people are like, this did not age well. And it's funny because we talk often about like, oh, did that age well? And did you know does this, this oh this book like still reads well, or like books that I enjoyed back in the 90s, did I enjoy them because they were a product of their times, or and that's what was the art then, or was it because I was a teenager and like had different tastes? But yeah, it was interesting to like read his take on that.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, I think there's something to be said about, something that lasts forever and not being topical because,
Yeah, that's true.
it speaks, I think, more to the human condition, whereas I think, teenagers go through the same thing no matter what,
Right.
No matter what time it is,
It's hard to yeah, it's hard to tell like when you're making something if it's going to be something that's going to be a product of its time or is going to like have a long-lasting effect. Like, you really don't know that until like 10 years down the line.
Yeah, I think that's, but I think, when we talk about it, there's a lot of things that go into it where is it style of writing? Because the 80s style of comic writing, dates it.
Oh,
And it's not it might not be a topical thing, but like Mark Miller's writing dated it because of the pop culture references.
yeah. It's funny. It when I read Kieran Gillen's thing, I was thinking about our discussion on Mark Miller, and I was thinking like, yeah, maybe we are too hard on Mark Miller, especially like his early 2000s writing, because if you look at like the action movies that were coming out around that time with like The Transporter and like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, like I feel like he was writing towards that, like th
Right,
that
that
sense of
ultra
yeah
violent.
the like ultra violent quick cuts, kind of not dirty dialogue, but like witty and kind of dirty dialogue.
I could see that. I think where his falters is, that I think my biggest problem with that series was that whole issue devoted to who would play the Avengers.
Definitely.
And that doesn't age well at all. And I think that's a little different than
It
writing
wasn't
an
like
action comics that's
weren't
ultra
there like
violent.
Freddie Prinze Jr. references in there?
Right. And it's just like it took you out of the book where it's like Freddie Prinze Jr.
Remember, you remember when he was a star? Right now, somebody's like Freddie Prinze Jr. for life, you jerks. Yeah.
Scooby-Doo, where are you?
Cool. So now, and the one book that you read, I wanted to talk about, High Crimes, which is a Monkey Brain comic that I have not read, but looks really cool.
Yes, it's written by Christopher Sabella and has art by Ibrahim Mostafa, and it was nominated for 2014 Eisner for Best New Series and Best Digital/Web Comic. It's from Monkey Brain, which means each issue is 99 cents each, and you get like, a good 22, 24 pages plus text pieces in the back about Mount Everest, which will make sense as I describe the series, which is about this woman who is a gold medal Olympian in I think it was snowboarding, and she's caught using drugs and stuff like that, and she ends up going to Tibet to learn how to climb the mountain, and she ends up working with this guy who goes up to the mountains and finds dead bodies, cuts off the hands of the dead bodies,
Ooh.
and asks the relatives for money to bring that body back home for them. And it's, I guess, a very lucrative business. So that kind of sets up the series, and basically they chop off the hand of a government agent who is up there dead and alert the wrong people.
Wait, what do you
And
mean alert the wrong people?
well, how he like tracks down who these people are is he has like a contact in the police agency who runs fingerprints and stuff, and so this basically alerts this like Men in Black operation from the U.S. government that this guy might be alive somewhere, and so basically they come in to kill anybody who's had contact with him, and it. That's pretty much, I don't want to spoil the series, but basically, the main character, she has that person's, that dead body, that government agent's diary, and she's reading it, and it parallels to what's going on, and her employer and pretty much father figure best friend is kidnapped and being tortured by these people as they go up Mount Everest. And
Interesting.
it's a great series.
Now, is that the whole series that you read, or is it
No,
keeping
it's still
going?
going. It's an ongoing. I think they just kind of put it out as the art comes through.
Gotcha.
But it's a great, great series. I mean, I highly recommend spending, $9 and reading the series. It's
Yeah, because these books are $1 a piece regular price, right?
right. I think I bought like there was like a Monkey Brain sale, like, that I think you and I were talking about Chris
Yeah,
Robertson's
back in the
Edison
summertime.
Rex. Yeah. And so that's
Yes.
when I bought this book, because I saw that it was
Gotcha.
Eisner nominated, and I was like, well, I'll pick that up. And
Yeah.
yeah, it was it's phenomenal. I got caught up with the rest of the series because, I mean, dollar piece, so I think only like two more books had come out since then. So like, you could get caught up really easily and, follow along if you'd like, or wait till they build up. But I'm guessing they just like wait for the art to finish, and
Gotcha.
when it does, it comes out. And I mean, it's worth it because that art's great and it's consistent. And yeah, I mean, I have nothing to say but good things about this book. I highly, highly recommend everybody check this out.
All right, so High Crimes from Monkey Brain gets a recommendation.
Yeah,
And that you can
definitely.
find in the comic on comixology.com and then just download it right to your iPad, right?
Yeah, exactly. The only other thing I read this week was Justice League 3000, number 7 through 12. I've been letting these guys build up and reading as I go along, and it's just really getting fun now. There's a lot of setup. It was about 6 issues of setup. I think that those issues kind of went pretty slow that I read at first, but now it's really it's pumping along. They have set up their base on, do you remember the series Camelot 3000?
Yeah, I remember when it came out. Well, not when it came out. I remember it being one of the few comics that DC put in trade, like in the 80s and early 90s. And they would come out with like their little catalog of trades, which would be like 4 pages.
Right.
And it would have this beautiful cover by Brian Boland and would be like The Dark Knight Returns and Swamp Thing,
Right. It was actually the
Sandman, and
first.
then Camelot 3000.
It was the first prestige miniseries.
Gotcha.
It predated Watchmen probably by a couple of months,
Oh, okay.
but it was around that same time, and was written by Mike Barr, who
Yes.
did the Green Arrow, the Butcher, the maybe no, not the Question, but that line of comics at the time, and so they set up their base on Camelot 3000's world. Booster Gold Blue Beetle just came into the series from the past, and they're like, "What the heck is going on?" And
Right.
it's really, I think, starting to take off.
Now you had mentioned to me that you realized like Justice League 3000 did not have an Earth on the multiverse map in the Multiversity Guidebook.
Right, and in interviews, Keith Giffen has stated that this is on its own world, and and it also has like the new 52 written on it. So, you're like, well, it's got to be one of those 52 Earths they talk about,
Yeah. Well,
So it must be one of those seven that aren't named.
yeah, it could be that, or it could just be in the future of one of the other Earths.
This is true. Or it could be outside of the local multiverse.
Yeah, maybe. I like for some reason I thought it was supposed to be the future of Earth 2. I don't know why.
They had made reference to maybe the Legion
Oh,
was
gotcha.
the future of Earth 2, but it was now it's not anymore because of what Lemire has done in Justice League United. And Keith Giffen said, "This is the Giffen to Mattis Earth, where
Ah.
everything has stopped. Basically, identity crisis didn't happen."
I see.
So yeah.
Yeah. So basically, it's their Justice League run, and then they're formerly known as Justice League runs.
Right.
All right, that's cool. Yeah. And yeah, that is a title that I keep meaning to pick up, especially now that Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are in it. I just haven't gotten around to reading that one yet.
Yeah.
Now, what other? So we talked about Jeff Lemire leaving DC. Another big deal name leaving is Brian Michael Bendis is not leaving Marvel, but he's leaving the X-Men books.
Yeah,
And
with Secret Wars.
that's really too bad because I'm enjoying Bendis on the X-Men books. I thought he was on the Avengers books a little too long. Like I'd stopped reading his Avengers run after, I believe, Secret Invasion, just because I found them all the Secret Invasion books to just be the same story over and over again that I was just
Right.
paying another $4 for. It's like this person's an alien too, and we'll show you why, and that's the same exact reason.
Yeah.
But that's too bad because I really like the way he was carving out his little corner of the X universe with Uncanny X, and not his little corner. He was writing the main titles with Uncanny X-Men and all new X-Men.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer,
I
but
wonder if
you
we're gonna
know.
see the I wonder if we're gonna see the end of all new X-Men with Secret Wars.
I would bet on it.
Yeah, it's too bad because it's such a good title.
Yeah. Also from Marvel this week, we learned that G. Willow Wilson is writing another title, and she'll be co-writing it with Marguerite Bennett. And this is A-Force, an all-female Avengers team.
Yeah, and this has been getting a lot of press. Like, this is the story comic book related story I see most on Twitter and Facebook and Flipboard. In the Tuesday Night Movies Flipboard magazine, this is the one that's been getting the most three flips this week. Yeah, this is a big deal. It's funny, like, listening to some pessimistic comic book fans talking about this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, it's the same pessimistic comic book fans who are pessimistic about every piece of comic book news.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it sounds really cool. If you read the article, I think if you look at the cover artwork, it looks like this is an Avengers team of every female
Right.
in the Marvel Universe, which you're like, how does that even make sense? But then when you read the article, you realize there's like, four women who are on a team together, and you're like, all right, cool. You know, like, and you know, I don't know, I haven't read naysayers' comments, but like, if it's like, well, you know, like, Marvel's pandering because it's just women, you know, like, I always like to think of it like, you know, do you see groups of friends who are just female? I sure do.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't they be, there be a superhero team?
Yeah, and they've tried this before, and it didn't work out, but that's no reason not to try it again with a slightly new take. And G. Willow Wilson is currently writing my favorite Marvel title, Ms. Marvel, so I'm definitely going to be giving this a shot.
Right, right.
And somebody did point out to me, though, that they, like, the first trade paperback needs to be named To Be Reckoned With. Think about it. Think about it.
To Be Reckoned With?
Yeah. A Force to Be Reckoned With.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the second volume should be called Of Nature. There's a lot of A Force puns to be made for this title. And I really hope Marvel uses them wisely, which I mean excessively.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to reading this. This should be really cool. Speaking of Marvel, did you watch the Netflix Daredevil trailer?
I didn't. I did see like a still from it, and the costume to me kind of looks like his costume, like when Daredevil met the Hulk on that TV.
It totally does. He doesn't have horns or anything. Like, I guess they wanted to be more street level or something.
Yeah.
And maybe like differentiate it from the Ben Affleck Daredevil.
Right.
But it looks pretty cool. I'm really excited to watch it. Looks definitely gritty and not Spider-Man dark. That's how I referred to Daredevil, the Ben Affleck movie.
That Ben Affleck movie is unwatchable. I remember I got tricked into buying the director's cut of the DVD because I heard that like made the movie much better. Nope, just made it longer and equally unwatchable.
I saw you on Twitter this week talking up everybody about Adam's costume on the Arrow.
You mean Exo Manowar?
Yes, I mean red and blue Exo Manowar.
And the funny thing is, in the original Exo Manowar comic, I think there was like Exo Manowar was like the heavy duty suit, but then there was like a scout suit that was similar in design, which I believe was either orange and blue or red and blue.
Yeah,
and I was like, this is that red and blue costume. And I looked all over the internet trying to find like Exo Manowar scout suit, could not find it. But yeah, that. Like, DC owes Barry Windsor-Smith money for that costume.
You know, I had recently, I've been trying to rack my brain, but there was another, like, maybe like half a year ago, another Armored Hero came out, and they were like, this just looks like Exo Manowar. Then I'm like, does Exo Manowar look like a generic suit a little bit now? I don't know. But when you put them right next to each other, they look very, very similar.
Yeah. It's funny, when I first saw it, I was like, holy crap, Adam looks like NFL Super Pro, if you remember that costume.
Right.
And I actually like was about to tweet out a picture of Adam in next to NFL Super Pro, and I was like, actually, they really don't look that similar to each other. And then I was like, wait a second, that is clearly Exo Manowar.
That's really funny.
Yeah, like if you recolor those costumes, they're basically the same costume, but very, very minor. The Adam suit looks more like the Exo Manowar costume than Arrow suit looks like Green Arrow.
Right. I think they're like, it was their way of trying to make Adam look realistic. Because he's like, I feel outside of the Flash, he's the first guy to like be a superpowered person.
Yeah, it is funny that to shrink, they need him to put him in, like, a lot of heavy-duty armor. I get, like, you know, you want to get that whole, like, scientific element to it, but at the same time,
right.
You put him in a less bulky costume, and maybe one that looks less than one of the flagship superheroes of one of your competitors.
Right, right. Yeah, I think they could have done it differently. Well, you know, And who knows how where it'll go, but
I'm hoping they introduce the spider aliens. Classic X-Men or villain. I mean, the arachnid UFOs, or what are they going to call them on the Flash?
yeah, but I'm looking forward to it still, just because his character has been fairly interesting on the Arrow, and the Flash has a Firestorm coming this week.
Oh, really? I have to watch The Flash this week because I am psyched for that.
Yeah, and it's been really cool. So it sounds like Cisco Ramon and maybe the Pied Piper will be tracking him down. I'm not sure if he like ducked out after this episode or not, but I really like that Cisco Ramon, aka Vibe, they've really set up as the opposite of the Pied Piper, and they both work on vibrations and frequencies. So
Oh.
their personalities are opposites as well too. So it's pretty cool.
That is really cool. This series seems to be DC, like the most right DC Comics live action series on right now.
Right. I think they have, it's a combination of good acting, not great acting, but good acting. Whereas Arrow could be a little dodgy at times. And just like embracing the characters. And I think, like as much as I'm really excited to see the Atom on Arrow, I feel like his costume's not necessarily embracing that character. Whereas everything on the Flash seems very comic book generated.
Yeah, it is. It seems like they are, mining the comics in the Flash, and not if keeping 100% true to the comics, like keeping definitely more than 50% true.
Right.
And then so that pretty much covers all our news for the week, right?
I think we're missing a big thing.
What am I forgetting here?
I think we are missing the new titles that are coming after Convergence.
Oh, that's right. That's right. This was like the hugest news before A-Force.
Right.
It was that. Actually, those both broke on the same day too. Both of those news came out on Friday, and I can't believe I forgot about this because I'm really excited for a couple of these books.
Yeah, the new titles are there's a lot of the old titles that are still there. Surprisingly, Lobo is still here. But
I'm
Action
happy
Comics,
that Gotham Academy is sticking around.
and I'm excited that Gotham by Midnight's still around. So there's definitely their core books are sticking around, like Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman's, all those, Green Arrow, Flash, Aquaman, you're a Justice Leaguer, you're there, or a Batman comic pretty much. But their new books look great. And what makes them great are the creative teams on a lot of them.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. We're actually the book I'm most excited for is just a limited series. It's a 5-issue series, and it's the Bizarro comic. And that's written by Heath Corson, and this is his first published comics work.
Right. People might know Heath Corson from the newer DC animated movies like Justice League War.
Throne of Atlantis.
Right. So yeah, if you like any of those, you should check out Bizarro. And it has awesome looking art from Gustavo Duarte.
His art on it looks great, and this is and I don't know why I'm like mumbling my speech here. But yeah, Gustavo's art looks great. I'm just super excited for this. Heath Corson has a clear love for DC characters. You see that in Justice League War and Throne of Atlantis. And here we're getting his take on Bizarro, which has to be one of the most fun characters to write.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a blast, and it looks like it's being done in a really fun way, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, if I had a guess, I would guess that the title you are most excited for is Earth 2 Society.
I not really actually.
Interesting.
I'll definitely be picking it up.
Okay.
I'm glad that they have society in the name, a la Justice Society, but it's being written by Daniel Wilson, who has not written comics or doesn't know too much about Earth 2 characters or the Justice Society, and he's the guy writing, or has been writing the head writer on the weekly series, and so it doesn't make me super thrilled about it,
Okay.
But I'm definitely gonna be, giving it a shot and reading it and all.
Yeah. And we also have Cyborg getting his first ongoing series.
Right.
And Ivan Reis is going to be doing the art on that, so they're really throwing everything at that book.
Yeah, that looks like it's going to be cool. When I saw that Cyborg and Dr. Fate were getting a series, and so was the Martian Manhunter. And you know what I said to myself? I said, man, you know what would be a great thing for DC to look at? And it was their superpowers
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like if you had a series for pretty much everybody that they made a superpowers figure for, you'd have a good shot at coming out on top,
I'm really excited for Cyclotron, which would probably be a series
That's
written by Dan DiDio.
why I said that's funny.
It would be one of those characters that he would write.
Right. But I mean, like, if you look at their lineup, that's a pretty much that's
Don't backpedal. Cyclotron was one of my favorite superpowers figures. He
the
was like the Red Tornado mixed with like Wonder Man from Marvel Comics because he looked like a dude. He was kind of shirtless, but not really. And then it turns out you could rip like his chest and face off, and he's a robot underneath. Who knew? Oh, right. He has Tron in his name.
Right.
Yeah, no. I'm waiting for the double turbine Red Tornado Cyclotron series to come out. DC, I'm ready to write that book. And if you don't want me writing it, I will buy it from you.
Right. But like, if you think about the superpowers action figures, you have your main Justice League characters, and you have Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Flash, Robin, Hawkman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman. Red Tornado might be sketchy. Martian Manhunter might be sketchy. Firestorm might be sketchy on their sales, but like, I think those are like sellable items,
Oh, definitely.
and so is Dr. Fate, so is Shazam, so is Plastic Man, so is Cyborg, the majority of their books, the figures show what I think would be sellable books,
Yeah.
I think, Mr. Miracle and Orion would hold the book together. You get kind of sketchy when you get into Cyclotron and Golden Pharaoh and Samurai.
You hush. You shut your mouth right now.
I would actually buy a Samurai comic because I'd be like, oh, all right, I'm in. Just on principle alone. But
Golden Pharaoh, though, man. Okay, that's where I guess you're stretching it.
Yeah, that was like a made for the line of figures figure. But I might jump in on Golden Pharaoh just to see what's going on.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I think We Are Robin looks really cool.
That's funny because I think Robin, son of Batman, looks really cool.
That looks really cool too. I
And
mean,
that is doesn't just have art by Patrick Gleason, but he is doing the he's doing the writing for it too.
that's right. Yeah, I think most of their new series look pretty amazing, and I'm excited that they brought Ming Doyle to the DC Universe. She's a great artist, and I'm interested to see how she's going to write Constantine the Hellblazer, and I can't wait to see how she draws the Dark Universe, written by James Tynion. Dark Universe looks like it's going to be just a bigger look at the Justice League Dark universe. And Ming Doyle has just phenomenal artwork, and I can't wait.
Nice. Yeah, I wish Dan Jurgens wasn't the one writing Batmite, or else I would be more excited for this book.
Yeah, me too.
But I at the same time, I feel like I don't know who I'd want writing a Batmite series.
You know who
That's
I
a
would,
tough one.
I would jump on an Art and Franco
Oh,
Batmite
okay.
series.
That would make a lot of sense. And I'm interested in checking out the Prez series that comes out. Prez, for some reason, is just one of those characters that I just love the concept of.
Yeah, I guess it was an old 70s comic.
Yeah. It only was around for a few issues, and then, it would get brought back for, like, I think he might have appeared in an issue of Sandman, or he might not have. And then he was in, like, the Mike Allred solo issue, I believe. Yeah, Prez makes appearances every now and again.
And the Starfire comic, I think it's worth noting that she looks not inappropriate for children, but she looks like her Teen Titans outfit Starfire, Teen Titans cartoon.
Like her Teen Titans Go outfit, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, that is definitely worth noting because that seems like the opposite of how they've been treating Starfire.
And I think the other cool news is that Garth Ennis and John McCrae are coming back to the Hitman universe with Section 8.
Yeah, so that this is the announcement of this book makes me wonder, are we going to get some pre-Flashpoint continuity coming back, or is this going to be Hitman but in the New 52?
I don't know. What it makes me think about is, are we going to see more Bloodlines characters?
One can only hope.
Oh, loose cannon.
We'll finally get that Bloodline sale that no one has been asking for.
Except for me, week to week, just, hey, DC, when are you gonna put your big
At New York
Bloodline?
Comic Con this year, you really have to get up at the DC panel and be like, when is Bloodlines going to be available on Comixology? And then when everybody stops laughing, you're like, I'm not kidding.
Where is it? Loose cannon, come on, guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
Purple Blanca.
Purple Blanca and Brick Boy Forever.
Come on, everybody loved Blood Pack. The team of Bloodlines heroes. That's when
Yeah.
I'll turn around and cry.
In the Image Revolution documentary, Rob Liefeld points out that Bloodlines was just an attempt by DC to, like, steal money from his brand at Image, because he was like, I got young blood, and then all of a sudden, within like 6 months, there was a mega event at Marvel and a mega event at DC, and they both had blood in the title. And I was like, actually, he makes a pretty good point.
I think, Eric Larson sometimes comes up. Did you say Eric Larson?
No, that was Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld comes off a little crazy sometimes,
Yeah,
but a
and
lot of
other
times
times.
his crazy is right.
Yeah, and like taking out of context, that sounds like a crazy thing, but like when you're looking at it, you're like, no, wait, that actually makes a lot of sense. I could totally
No.
see Marvel and DC both doing that.
Right, you're like, this is accurate. This is
Because
very,
like
very accurate.
Marvel is the company that came out with Identity Disc because DC had Identity Crisis coming out. Yeah.
Marvel definitely played in that field a lot.
Yeah.
I only hope that this new convergence or post-convergence DC world, which is supposed to still be in the New 52 continuity, but they're not stressing continuity as much as they were before. Like, if Superman was here, then he's got to be over here, and that
Right.
kind of stuff.
Well, I will say this about, like, the state of the New 52 post-convergence. IGN ran a headline that says DC is ending the New 52. And basically it was about how DC is taking the New 52 banner off the front of their books. That
Right,
they're not going back to, like, pre-Flashpoint continuity. That headline exists solely for DC fanboys to click on and hope and to share on Facebook. I saw so many people share that headline on Facebook, I think, without reading the article, because they were like, finally, it's happening. The new 52 is ending.
Right.
And like, if you read the article, no, it's not ending. It's this was just like a clickbait headline and shoddy journalism on the part of IGN.
Right. Well, I really do hope that, like, we get, like, you know, better versions of characters for this, where, like, you know, I think when you look at, like, Marvel, when they started Marvel Knights, and they made, like, Punisher, like, a ghost killer or something.
Right.
I forget what the storyline was, but, you know, you're like, nobody bought it. It was awful. And then Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon came around and did the Punisher. And at the end of the first book, he was like, I worked for Angels, but that for a little bit, but that didn't really work for me. And that was it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That was, they just were like, yeah, that happened, but we're not even going to try to explain how he got to this point again.
Oh, I think that's how comics work best. It's like, you know what? Yeah, that thing that happened in the past that we don't want to pretend happened anymore, let's just never bring it up ever again.
Right, and I think, I hope that kind of lets DC go, well, we tried this Firestorm series and it didn't work. Let's throw something else against the wall.
That's how comics work best, and that's also how, like, family relationships work best. Just don't bring up the awkward stuff at Christmas or Thanksgiving, and it just makes everything go smoother. You don't need to blow up the turkey and reboot the turkey.
Right, right.
Don't bring up the weird stuff.
On that note, not to get awkward, but are you ready to finish this podcast?
I think I am ready to finish this podcast. No reboot necessary.
Yeah.
We'll be back here next week with another all-new episode of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast. In the meantime, we want you to enjoy the comics that you read tomorrow at the new comic book store. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, please head over and give us a review. Even if you have constructive criticism, we'd love to hear it. But if you want to give us a 5-star review, we'd love to hear that even more.
Well, we won't be awkward. We'll just pretend like it didn't happen.
Yeah. We won't judge you or secretly hate you or scrawl your name on the wall over and over and over again. Why?
Pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, 4-star review, I'll kill them. I mean, just kidding. Give us whatever you think is appropriate. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, or you could, you know, listen to us at TuesdayNightMovies.com. Each episode is posted there for your enjoyment. And guys, I hope you have an amazing Tuesday night.